The Nitty Gritty. Ben Carter and the general sat down together at another table, looking like a mini junta. Said Ben, "I got the word from Rip, who got it from the crew. The food supply is running low, and in 2 days we'll have to go." "So," he continued, "we were sent here with a mission and should come to some decision as to whether Crow is ripe for trade. It's clear to me this planet lacks a minimal economy, but has the asset of a 1 billion population, all of them potential workers and consumers. This represents a demographic similar to baby boomers. So here's my plan. We'll lend them, let me see, $10 billion ought to be enough to give the crows the wherewithal to buy the stuff that Earth produces, theme parks, pesticides, and such, and charge them only 10% per annum interest. Clearly that's a deal that any usurer would call a steal. What collateral would we require? None at all. We'll take their IOU and shake their hand. Should they default, we'll simply confiscate their land." "Good shot," said Dora Battle, stroking the bright ribbons on her chest. "Now, off the record, here's what I suggest. If we discover Crow has gold, uranium, or other wealth, we colonize the planet, send the Army Corps of Engineers to canalize and dam it, and several thousand workfare employees to man it. Then, to guarantee the whole thing clicks, we'll add 10,000 GIs to the mix." Said Ben, "Your scheme's first rate. Preemption of another state worked pretty well for Belgians, Frogs, and Brits, who reaped enormous benefits before they had to call it quits. If we both colonize and lend at 10%, I'll bet that in 1,000 years, if Crows have freed themselves of debt, they'll be as happy as today, with no tears or regret." "I'm curious," said Dora Battle, "what Steve Clift, our resident geologist, has found beneath the Crotian ground. Our native peoples hate to mine uranium and tend to get most quarrelsome when asked to lend their tribal lands to store atomic waste. But Crows, I'm sure, would gladly do the mining and the storing, too, for beads made out of paste." "I like your style," said Carter. "There's not an angle you've neglected. Any company that trades up here will find itself darn well protected. Sending soldiers is a brilliant touch. Not that the Crotians could do much to block the future we've projected." "Still," said Battle, "to forestall all unexpected glitches, we'll have to win their hearts and minds by promising them jobs and riches. For if the Crotians feel disquiet, and any of them start to riot, primetime television features showing GIs gunning down these teddy bearish creatures might cause hitches." "I see your point," said Ben. "It's not as though the Crows were black with bones stuck through their noses. Should a gold mine boss or guard shoot down a savage in New Guinea, kill his wife and pickaninny, who would know or give a hoot, unless a bullet ricocheted and hit some fellow in a suit? But as you say, the Crotians are too cute to shoot." "Exactly," said the general. "We mustn't be perceived as causing one of them to die. To keep them calm, we'll launch an operation codenamed Pacify. This means our propaganda has to zero in on that objective and be 10 times more effective than it was in Vietnam. Disinformation should be handled by a guy as quick to lie and smoothly verbal as the Third Reich's Joseph Goebbels, greedy and at home with schlock as that ex-Aussie Rupert Murdoch, able to manipulate minds, hearts, ambitions, and emotions while speaking easily to Crotians. Impossible to find? Well, we're in luck. The one I have in mind to pitch the riches to the Crotians is the duck. Now don't forget," she warned, "no word of this can be repeated." Then Dora Battle looked around and saw cartographer Perrone seated at a table all alone, like some abandoned sap. Was this because the gal he loved was taking a mid-morning nap with that pragmatic guy who wore that red and yellow tie? "We'll tap this fellow too," said she, "to draw some lines upon our map."